This is us getting ready for the show, folks. Okay? We're taking you inside today. This is Russ handling things, shuffling around.
Okay, boys! I'm ready!
There it is. And when you're ready, Russ, we're ready. Welcome again, everybody, to the show of The Suspendables with me, Jungle Jim, and Russ Cortinel. Coming up today, of course, we talk about the unspeakable, unthinkable tragedy of Kobe Bryant, his daughter, and seven other people who died and perished in a helicopter accident this past week. Russ, as we morph into this conversation about heroes and idols and what it means, and Russ talks about his on the show, and it's very cool. Bob Gainey, a teammate of Russ's, gave a speech when they were losing in a playoff series, and it completely, single-handedly turned around the team. Totally interesting there. One of the great things that I've ever heard, Russ was pretending when he played for the Kings that he was Luke Robitaille, and he did an interview. The guy thought it was Luke Robitaille. Priceless, absolutely priceless. What was the biggest thing, Russ, you noticed when you came to the NHL? He's got something to say about that, and I'll give you a couple of tips how to make it with the ladies. Okay, probably someone else. Stick around. All that and much, much more coming up in The Suspendables. You know, it's one of these shows when what happened yesterday, which we're going to talk about, I fear, you know, saying, you know, because of what happened with Kobe, going, what are we going to talk about? It almost seems thoughtless to talk about anything else but that. But as everyone knows by now, by the time this podcast gets put up, that Kobe Bryant and his daughter and seven other people died tragically in a helicopter accident yesterday. And they were snuffed out, all those lives, completely. Tell us, Russ, when you heard, by the way, this happened a mere couple miles from your house up in the north of L.A., in Calabasas. Tell us your relationship with Kobe first, Russ.
I don't. I'm like everybody else that just knows him through, you know, basketball. And I never got to meet Kobe, unfortunately. I saw him, you know, I saw him at the rink when I was there. But I got to meet Shaq when I played for the Kings, but I didn't get to meet Kobe, unfortunately.
When you heard it, Russ, the news, when you first heard it, tell me, if you can, exactly what your feeling was right away when you heard that.
I just felt horrible. My daughter told us, she texted us from the Pro Bowl. She was there watching Eric play. And we were just, my wife had and I just got back from the market, which is maybe a mile and a half from there. We would go to this outdoor market and bought some stuff. And that's how we heard, and I just felt horrible. And then we, friends of ours that know him, started telling us that he was on his way to a basketball game. And oh my gosh, I've never cried so much for a person I don't know in my life. Well. I mean, 2 days. All the interviews. Jerry West. Every time I see him on TV, I mean, I just you can just. It's like he lost his son. That's what he's talking about. It's like I was his surrogate father and didn't know that relationship that he had with him, and just horrible to watch. And then to think of, you know, we have kids, and when you have kids and you think about them losing their dad, the wife losing her husband and the father to her kids and a son and, on and on and on, and then these other people. My daughter posted today a picture of this family, and I go, "Who's this?" And she said, "Of this family of five, three of them were on the helicopter." And you know, I was just talking to Paris, my wife, about this, but when my dad committed suicide, I was on a lake in. On the mainland, Powell Lake, and it was a floating cabin, and the two RCMP officers came up in their boat to tell us that my dad had died. And it just, all that came back, you know. And I went to a fundraiser last night, and it's all everybody was talking about. Mm-hmm. Just devastated. So
it, and I'm sorry you had to go through that to you know, conjure up this memory of your dad. You know, you brought up Jerry Buss, who was
Jerry West,
who was original owner of the Lakers.
No, he was the general manager, I believe.
Okay,
Jerry Buss was the original owner, or the owner of the, and his daughter still owns the team.
Right, but yesterday you were talking about listening to
Jerry West,
who, and I saw that too, and he was, you know, completely brought to tears by the thing. And talking about the relationship he had with Kobe.
Yeah.
And then he compared it. He said, I don't know what to... The only thing I can ever compare this to was my brother got killed in the Korean War.
Ugh.
You know, and, you know, I'm like you. You know, when I watched it, you couldn't help but see coverage of it.
Yeah.
It just knocked my socks off, you know. One of the things, Russ, when I think about this thing yesterday and this unbelievable... you know, massive outpouring of Kobe Bryant's support, and you know, ranging everywhere from teammates to Jerry to other people, friends of the family, and there was a young girl who was playing in a college playoff game yesterday who was a friend of Kobe's, and they interviewed her, and I mean, she was just, you know, in pieces, you know, yeah, about what the guy meant. And it doesn't surprise me, Russ, because we've been around this before. There's, you know, tragedy and important is a huge part of life that sucks. But it made me sort of look up and go, oh my God, like the impact that this guy had on people who would never meet him, who would never have a chance of meeting him, who never did, who only knew him through the media, is, you know, completely beyond curiosity, right? And mm-hmm. Why do you think that is, Russ? Why do these sports stars? It's happened before, you know, and actors and celebrities have died tragically before and are taken way too early, and yet it means an unbelievable thing to people. And why do you think that is, Russ, with our sports icons?
Well, I saw a quote. I think it said, heroes come and go, but legends live forever. And he is a legend. I watched people drive to the site, like on TV. So mm-hmm. that's all that was on TV in LA yesterday.
Sure.
I was watching the golf and it went right to, this is all they covered. And people drove to the site, and I know it's just down the road from me. I know exactly where they're parked. I know exactly where the hill is. And they felt they needed to go there to pay respect to this man and his daughter. And just this one guy, he broke down and he goes, you know, I've got girls, I've got daughters, and all you want is the best. And you don't ever want to, you know, lose your child before, you know, while you're alive, and you want them to bury you. And he just, it was just stuff like that, you know. And then downtown LA, everyone probably saw the Grammys they were getting ready for the Grammys, and everybody showed up to pay respect again to Kobe and just be around one another, who all these people loved him. And, mm-hmm. you know, people like that don't all they don't come along all the time. You know, we always think of when these legends leave the game, like Wayne Gretzky and mm-hmm. Tiger, who are going to replace these great people? And then, you know, people come along. But in the moment when you're watching somebody like Gretzky or Tiger or Kobe uh-huh. or whoever, you're, you know, Babe Ruth, You think, oh my gosh, you know, will we ever see anybody like this? And right. that's who he was. I mean, that's, I'm not a huge basketball fan. I don't watch basketball. I used to watch Steve Nash because I have a relationship, but And boy, this guy, man, he touched so many people's lives.
Poof. Well, yeah, and the other thing is, with this reaction by people, which would be predictable, right, to a degree, and understandable, is a lot of the commentary on him is away from basketball.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. It's like a few people might make reference to what he did, and he, you know, mm-hmm. he played this 17 or 18 years or whatever it was, and he scored these many points and all. But that's very much a one-off, you know, compared mm-hmm. to what this is. And I almost get a sense, Russ, like this is a day and age where you have more access as a fan, where you have more and more access every single day to your favorite player. You know, through social media, all the games are televised now. Guys are on Twitter, they're on Instagram, they do Facebook stuff. And I got to admit that you begin to get this feeling that I'm part of the guy's family almost. You know, it's like I made the reference when Mike Weir won the 2003 Masters as a Canadian, people were crying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're like, I feel like it was my son.
Yeah.
You know, who won this thing. And yeah. And they often talk about Walter Gretzky being Canada's father. Mm-hmm. You know, that people relate to this guy in a you know, visceral way. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm looking at that today. You know, and you know, it's so much so, Russ, that and I want to ask you about personally about this, but it's like so much. There's such an appetite for people to be part of the celebrity's life that they start to do things like, well, you were in it, like Battle of the Blades, you know, mm-hmm. let's do anything with these people. People are going to soak it up. I was, you know, I remember turning the TV on one day going, Owen Nolan, who was a star in the mm-hmm. NHL, has a fishing show, you know, and I'm like, why? And I remember a guy telling me, saying, because people just want to see them. They want to be part of their life, you know. Mm-hmm. And did you at any point in your career, Russ, because I always thought it would be big pressure on a celebrity and an athlete to represent, so to speak, and begin to understand the effect that he has on particularly young people. And did you ever go through that saying, you know, my life has changed here. My life is, you know, I'm have an impact now on other people's lives. Did you go through that, or do you still feel it?
I don't know. I don't know about that. I mean, I definitely, when I was playing during the game, I loved it. I loved the playing in front of 18,000 people and the impact that you could have on the crowd. That to me was phenomenal. But when I left the building, I left that there, and I didn't ever want to be one of those guys that, you know, had to have that outside of the game. I think that it's dangerous, and I think that's why some guys have a hard time retiring, because they feel like they've just lost their identity. So my identity was when I had my uniform on as an athlete, and sure, I tried to do good things outside the game and stuff, but I really felt like if you're living, you want to live that 24/7, you're in for a fall or some mental health problems.
Right. But
you know what I mean?
I do, but some of that stuff, I get what you're saying, in a perfect world, right? I get to go skate, I get to walk home, but I've been around you, Russ, over the years where, and I get lots of emails from people now who listen to our show, and I've been around you where, say, we go to the bar and there'll be some crazed Russ Courtneau fan and maybe one or two who run at you and are almost brought to tears themselves going, dude, you do not know what this means to me. I can't believe, can I get a picture? Will you sign an autograph? And I've been in that uncomfortable situation where you sort of turn at me and wink and go, look at this guy, but then he won't leave. Right. And so obviously it has this crazy impact on people. And, so some of that, I don't think you have a choice, right?
Boreas Alming taught me a lesson when I was 18 or 19.
Mm-hmm.
A girl came up to me in front of him and another guy, another older player. Obviously, they're all older than me at that time. And she did that. She came up, asked for my autograph, asked for all of our autographs, mm-hmm. and then stood there and talked to us. And then as she left,
right.
I said, oh, nice talking to you, or nice listening to you. As a judge, I was trying to make, I was nice listening to you, but I said it to the guys, not to her. And just trying to be funny, trying to fit in. And Boris Salming, who was my idol growing up.
Yeah.
I love Boris Salming. He's my favorite player. And he turned to me, looked down, and he said, who the fuck do you think you are? He goes, that person came yeah, over thanks. To talk to us, wanted your autograph, wanted my autograph. They pay our salaries, these people that want to meet us. So smarten up. And from that moment on, I signed every autograph. I listened to all the fans, and I tried to be as good as I could to everyone, whether I was not in the mood or in the mood. I always was tried to be respectful to the fans, and Boria taught me that lesson when I was a kid. So that's my answer to how you know people come up to you and want autographs.
And right. And you're faced with it for the first time going, okay, this is part of my deal.
Yeah.
This is part of my life now.
Yeah.
Closest to home to you and I, and closest to everyone in Canada, of course, is Wayne Gretzky, right? The, uh-huh. the Kobe Bryant tragedy would be, equivalent to that, right?
Yep.
And, you know, I know Gretz, when I follow him around like a lost puppy, you know, I still do. I've known him 30 plus years.
Gretz, can I have another?
Yeah, that's me, a seal. What do I have to do? The trained seal.
Yeah.
And quite often, I find myself being completely annoyed. We're trying to shoot the shit about something. It's, you know, he's never alone, but you do get these times when maybe you are just sitting around and you're having a, you know, and then of course it'll last about, I don't know, 45 seconds till three more people come running at him, panicking, saying, I'm sorry to interrupt. And then of course, go ahead and do it. And I remember saying, dude, how do you possibly put up with this all the fucking time? Okay. Uh-huh. About these. And he said, Jimmy, my boy, it was either him or it might have been Gus Bedali, his original agent and stuff like that, who said, he told me a long time ago that, Wayne, when you're in your own house, you don't have to do shit.
Right.
You don't have to do anything when you're in your own house. But as soon as you leave the door, unfortunately, from this day forward, you've got to sign autographs.
Yeah.
And you can never say no, you know, to a reasonable degree. And, you know, I've had friends, Russ, who... We were down in Florida on a golf trip with a buddy of mine in Sarasota. And you'll always hear people say, Russ, you've been through this. And they'll go, you know, knock it off, guys. Don't, you know, you can put him on a pedestal, but he's just a guy.
Yeah.
You know, he's just another guy.
Yeah.
And sure enough, we were down there. Gretz phoned me and said, come on, bring your guys up to Tampa. It's about an hour north of Sarasota. Mm-hmm. I'm doing a function here for Budweiser or something. And grab eight guys from your golf trip. And I said, great. These guys will go bananas, you know. Yeah. And so when I told them that, you know, we're leaving at the end, we got, you know, four or five of the guys were like, are you kidding me? We're going to meet him. I'm like, yeah. The guy's like, what should I wear? Fuck. and oh my God, wait, I got to get home. I got to shower. Fuck it. I can't play golf anymore. Let's go. I got to call my wife. I got to get my kids. I got to get the camera going. Right. And it's a very normal reaction. Right. And, mm-hmm. and I stopped a long time ago trying to tell them to calm down. But there was one guy who's a dear friend of mine, Dave, who said, oh, relax, everybody. Just calm down. He's just a guy, mm-hmm. right? And sure enough, we all pile in a van that we rented, and we pile up there, and Dave's telling everyone to calm down. You know, they're all getting excited. It's like the guys are going to me like kids, like Santa Claus is going to show up, you know? Are we going to meet him? Is he by himself? Can I sit with him? Can I touch him? Can I ask, right? And Dave keeps saying, back off, you guys. You're going to embarrass yourselves, you know? Sure enough, we get there. We pile out of the van, and Billy, my buddy, is the first one to run at him and won't get out of the way. Almost, I had to grab him and go, Billy, step aside. He's got to meet the other guys. And my friend Dave comes up to shake his hand, and immediately I see his hand. He sticks his hand out to shake Wayne's hand, and Dave's hand is shaking. It's quivering, okay? and then he gets tongue-tied with trying to say, nice to meet you. And I'm not lying, Rusty. His complexion changes.
Oh, okay? No.
And he's getting a little faint. And sure, and I sort of nudge him, go, he's just a guy, eh? Dave, just a guy. We go up to sit in a bar, and Dave fucking pushes everyone out of the way to sit beside him. And and he's nervous, and he's, you know, he's sort of embarrassing himself with questions, and Wayne gets up to go for a leak, you know, and Dave is the first guy to go, Jungle, where's he going? Is he leaving? Is he leaving? I said, no, he's just a guy, Dave. He's going for a piss, you know? And Rusty, he goes like this, well, fuck, he can't go alone. He might get mugged. I better go in there, you know? It's just, this guy, he goes, this guy's a hero.
Yeah.
And that was the guy who said, it's just a guy. And I always challenge anyone who says that. And I said, you talk to me after you meet him.
Yeah.
And tell me what you go through. And I mean, I still get sort of, this is, you know, when whatever occasion comes up that I'm hanging around Wayne, go, this is crazy. You know, this is fucking crazy. Yeah. This guy's a buddy of mine. And it's so people have this, you know, nuts reaction, you know, about celebrities, and they want to be a part of it. And, you know, that's always my experience with Wayne. You know, I get people calling me and emailing me for autographs, and the story of what it meant to this guy and a shrine that they have in their house and a whole room. I knew a guy who had 4 tattoos of Wayne from all his teams in the NHL.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, crazy shit. So anyway, I don't know. Steve, you'll have to find some music so we can transition to more stuff. But what a terrible day for anyone who has a parent or kids. It was just, that's what happened to me when I heard about it. You know, I automatically, Russ, when I hear that, especially as I get older, put myself in that situation and go, oh, my God. You know, oh, my God, lose a kid. And anyway, we got... God bless Kobe and terrible days ahead for him and the family. And we got other stuff to talk about, Rusty, when we come back. Right now, let's thank Elite Sports and Promotion, Elite Promotional Marketing, who the shirts have been mailed out, Russ. And Elite was the guys who ran these off and shipped them for us. And I'm meeting with them tomorrow, Russ, as we speak, to open up our web store. For people to buy a bunch of merchandise with our logo on it, the Suspendables. And thanks a lot to those guys, to Drew and everyone over at Elite Promotional Marketing. Go online and you can see what these guys do. If you own a company and you're trying to think of a giveaway for your staff or prizes for a golf tournament and stuff, these guys do incredible and really new ideas. Anyway, Rusty, it was All-Star Weekend, right? Did you watch any of it? What's the deal?
I didn't.
You were in an All-Star game.
Yeah.
I knew you'd have fuck all to say about that.
94. Great. It was such a great time.
Yeah. Tell us about it.
I actually did watch a little bit of it. I watched a little bit of the 3-on-3, and it just, you know, All-Star games are tough, tough to watch because the Pro Bowl was on yesterday, and I watched a second of that, and I don't know. I like the real stuff. But the All-Star game was in New York City when I went. It was just a great time. I was hanging out with Gretz and, of course, you know, meeting all these movie stars and daytime soap opera stars. Like Janet was there, Paris was there, and we got invited to these dinners and just we had a ball.
Back up a bit, Russ, first for a second. Sorry to interrupt. What was it like when you got the call?
Oh,
was one of your dreams to play in an All-Star game and take us through that and when you did get the call?
You're challenging me there. I think Bob Gainey just came up and told me that I was going. He was our general manager coach. Right. And so he just said, congratulations, you're going to the All-Star game. I think that's it. I've of course, playing the NHL, you strive to be the best player you can be, and I, you know, when the All-Star teams were picked, and when I was, there was a few times that I was probably expecting the call and I didn't get the call because I was leading the team in points or, you know, having
did
a good
pitch
start
off. Were
oh
you
yeah
off?
Yeah yeah I did it pissed me off. So a few times I was disappointed that I didn't get picked, but, anyways, that's life. And when I did get picked, I really enjoyed it. My parents came, which was fun for them. They got to come to New York and And Allie had just been born, so my oldest daughter, she got to come. She'll never remember it, but anyways, it was a good time. It was a really good time.
All right. The game itself for us, is it all fun all the time, or are there some guys who are a little over the top when you got to turn around on the bench and go, hey, fucker, dial it back a bit, okay? It's fucking all-star game.
So when I was in one of the first games that they were given like cash, they're trying to make the players play harder. So right. they a winning team got 25,000, the losing team I think got 10,000, or I don't even know what it was, but it was, you know, it was a good amount of money, and we were leading, and I'm like, oh my god, I'm gonna win 25 grand here. Foom, 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 foom. Mark Messier picked it up. Eric Lindros, and I was on the west. They were on the east and freaking filled our net, and that was it. There goes the 25 grand. And my old, the assistant coaches from Montreal Canadiens, were the coaches with Pat Burns. And they came by me after we had a dinner after for everyone, and I'm sitting at the table, and they came by holding up the check or something. They're like waving at me, like, hey, Rusty, we got all the money, Tabernacle. And I'm like, oh my God. So I was so pissed off when they did that. It was, God, I was like 25 grand. I was going to buy a new car or something like that. I don't know. But anyways, didn't happen. And there's, you know, Gretz and Holly and all these guys. I think Iserman was there, Shanahan. I can't remember who's.
Were you starstruck, Russ, when you went there? I mean, you're
no,
pretty.
No, I was more, for me, I wasn't starstruck. I just felt a little uncomfortable at first meeting players that I'd played against and didn't know. I was in a room that Arthur Urbe came in, the member of the goalie.
Yes. Yeah,
he came in and went around the room and shook everybody's hand, like, nice to meet you, nice see you again, hey, nice, like, went around. He was like a freaking accountant that, you know, was like a CEO of a
company.
Trying
to get clients.
and just walking around being super polite. I'm like, oh, what, are you supposed to, like, go and introduce yourself to everybody? I don't know if you're new. Anyways, I played with, on a line with Doug Gilmore and, I freaking just lost his name. Andrzejczyk. I played on the wing with those guys, and being around the guys I didn't know was uncomfortable for me, but the event was great.
One of the funniest things I ever heard, and you would fit right into this. It's a story from Kevin Lowe where. Not only is the All-Star Game big for the players, you know, we get to go for the first time, but there's a lot of media guys, right, who get to cover it for the first time when they get the tap on the shoulder going, we're sending you to the All-Star Game, you know, we're sending you to spring training, you're going to cover the World Series, you're going to cover the Stanley Cup. And so there was I forget who it was, young media guy, who got the tap, you're going to go cover the All-Star Game, you're going to do, you know, interviews the night before the game at one of these functions, go around and just get some clips.
Yeah.
And they all knew, you know, you guys always had a great relationship with the media, right? You knew them as friends as much as anything. And this new guy, the three players who knew they were supposed to be interviewed by him, all got together and said, don't give the guy any more than a yes, no answer.
Oh. Okay.
As a joke. Right. And I saw the clip there one time, and Kevin Lowe's being interviewed, and the kid goes, he's shaking, you know, he's like, Kevin, it's a real treat to get to interview you. And even was a little real, you know, he said, this is a first for me, and it's a big day, and can you put in thoughts what this means to you? And Kevin goes, not really. Right. And I thought, I should probably ask Rusty if he has any experience on pranks with things in the media or guys you didn't like or did. But
I've told a couple stories over the different podcasts, but this one, probably my favorite one, was in LA, and they had a hard time getting the media to cover hockey,
right?
And they wanted to interview Luke Robitaille on he was going to become close to being the all-time left wing goal scorer. I can't remember exactly, but it
Don't
was about
me.
goals, right?
Yeah.
So they bring this guy down. They had the hardest time getting this reporter to come and interview. It was a big deal. And the media guy, Mike Altieri, was running around the room. He was so excited that he had pulled off this coup to get this big shot into the room. So this guy comes up to me, and people always mistook, would come up to Luke and go, "Hey, Russ, can I have your autograph?" Or, hey, Russ, thinking, yeah, I'm Luke. "Hey, Luke, can I have your autograph?"
Thinking you're Russ.
Yeah. So he goes, "Luke, can we do that interview now?" And I go, "Sure." So I sit down, I sit in his stall, and he's in the shower. And I sit in his stall, and he's going, "So what do you think about, breaking the all-time or passing this guy?" And I go, "Well, it's about time. That guy's not, you know, he's not that great a player. And I'm so sorry that it's taken this long, but, you know, finally I get to pass him." And he goes, "Oh, okay." And then he's writing, and he's got the, so they write notes, they shorthand notes, and they've got the recorder going at the same time so they can go back and check their notes.
This guy must be thinking, "What a scoop here. What a scoop."
"So what do you think of your career?" And I go, "Well, I'm so underrated, and I'm finally getting, you know, noticed, and I've been the best player in the league for a long time. And, you know, it's great that finally I'm getting rewarded for it." I started to say all this cocky stuff, like nothing Luke Robitaille would ever, ever say. And this guy is going, "Oh my God, this." So I do the whole interview, and the guy goes, "Thank you very much." And it's just one arrogant thing after another, and I'm ripping players, and I'm all this stuff. And I go up to Mike Altieri, and I go, I know nothing about this guy. I just know he took me for Luke. So I don't know that he's worked on this interview. I know nothing.
Right.
I go, "Oh, Mike, you won't believe it. This guy just interviewed me. He thought it was Luke Robitaille." And he goes, "Who?" And he rattles off his name, and I can see the seriousness in his face. And he knows I'm a practical joker. And he goes, "You did what? It took me 4 months to get that guy to come here and interview any of you guys. Oh, you're an effing asshole." And he goes, "Where is he?" And I go, "He just left." And he ran down the hallway, and the guy came in, and he came by me, and he goes, "That was good." He goes, "I always heard that Luke was a humble French guy."
That's awesome.
Anyway, so that was my that was one of my favorites with the media, and I had no idea of the backstory of how hard Mike Altieri had worked to get this guy.
He was your PR guy with the team.
Oh, he was the media PR guy. Yeah, great guy. I think he's a big shot with the Kings now. I don't, right. You know, he's moved up the ladder, but he's told that story many, many times.
I would only expect that from you, Russ. I really would. Yeah, it's like when I said, "Well, you know, if I know Russ, when he was wondering whether he'd be picked for the All-Star game, he probably would call them and go, 'Listen, I'm going to do you guys a favor. I agree to go to the All-Star game.'"
Oh God! I was just getting I was in Westlake where I live, and I was getting my eyes checked. I haven't had them checked in 2 years, and I go through this. There's four girls there. I go through the whole thing at this advanced optometry, great office. Anyways, so I said to the girls, they're picking out frames for me. And I mean, what do you think? And they pick out, they put them on. No, yes, no, yes. I go, "Oh, God, I wish my wife came with me and then she could decide." Right. And this girl named Stacy, I said, "Okay, can you give me your card and give me your number so I'll call you? I'm definitely buying one of these, but I got to get my wife to, you know, pick them out."
"Oh, yeah. What are you, whipped? You couldn't pick your own frames?"
She goes, "Yeah, here's my number. And only call me 3 times a day.
It was she funny. Making a little move at you?
I don't think so. I don't think so, but it was funny. They were... I said that we should do the show from here. You guys are characters. And I started telling about the show. And I said, "Yeah, but I start off the club with drinking White Claws." And one girl goes, "Well, make sure if you come in here, you bring 6. I go, "Well, we're going to need more than 6.
Nice. I'll tell you what, Russ. This worked for me twice. It was a move that my buddy gave me about trying to pick up a girl. Okay, and this worked for me twice. I didn't even need glasses, okay, at the time.
Uh-huh.
And so I went into a frame store, eyeglass frame store, and trying on frames.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they come over right away. It's usually women who are there for whatever reason. And I would only pick places where there were women working there. And I walk in and I try on frames. Okay. Hey, this is a hell of a move, Russ. And it worked. And I try them on. She go, can I help you? And I went, yes. Do you mind helping me pick frames? And whatever you think is right, I'm going to take it.
Mm.
Boom. Not a bad move, Rusty. Not a bad move. Right?
Good for and you.
The other one was grocery shopping, where you go up to a girl who's got her list, her grocery shopping list, and you go, hey, I forgot my shopping list. Can I borrow yours? anyway, I love that. God. That Luke Robitaille story is award-winning.
No wonder you're single.
Yeah, I thought it worked.
Like,
what are you, this a moron? Twice. You don't have your own list? Get away from me, you idiot. So the All-Star game was on. I'm of the opinion, Russ, I didn't watch any of it, because I'm watching the Canadian kid is in the Australian Open. Ronich, he plays again tonight to go into the quarterfinals. He's on fire. Hasn't lost a set yet. The kid from Toronto.
Nice.
Stevie always gives me shit about how I pronounce his name. It's Ronich. Ronich. Stevie?
Ronich.
Ronich, there he is. There's our editor.
There he is.
The kid's going to play Djokovic tonight, number one player in the world, or number two, actually, behind Nadal. But Russ, I saw a bunch of shit about the All-Star game. And I know Bettman is, you know, saying, we got to make this game better. You talked about it earlier. They got to try and improve it, make the players want to do it. There's that debate all the time that some of them don't go, or should they be obligated to go, or have no choice, blah, blah, blah. Skills game, speed contests. Mm-hmm. It's a bunch of shit to me. And Russ, I know they're trying to get people interested in the game, but I really think, I compare it to the Grammy Awards, you know, they're trying to make this thing big. And the outpour from people from the Grammy Awards is, this is getting ridiculous. It's about anything but the music. And I'm getting the sense the All-Star game is, it's sort of everything but the hockey. And I think it's making people not interested in the game, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know what your thoughts are about promoting the game. You know, that brings me to another thing. Ovi, Wayne Gretzky made a comment, because everyone's looking at Ovi now, that if he lasts without getting injured, he might set the all-time goals record. And in an interesting comment from Wayne, he more or less said, well, I hope he does.
Ooh.
And my knowing him, and like you do as well, I fully understand the reason he's saying that is because he thinks it'll improve the game if someone sets a record, and he's all about that. And is the All-Star game, is it going to improve the interest in the game, Russ? Is it just this sort of shit show for a weekend?
I don't think so. I think it's just an event. I think that it's, you know, what improves the game is the great play of these great players and the new players that we have. And I think the All-Star game is a party. It's some players get to show off their skills.
Yeah.
What are you doing? Are you writing?
Scratching. I'm writing notes here. I'm writing notes.
Jeez. Oh,
don't get
you
all twitchy with me,
you
pal.
Can
okay.
Write?
You're,
well, I thought, you're I hearing thought maybe somebody was taking notes. I didn't know you could write.
You're hearing a pen. You're hearing a pen scratch on the. Okay. Here's what you hear. Okay. You hear this from me.
Yeah.
Here's what I hear from you. Oh, cow. Sorry, Jimmy. Hang on. I got to go. Hang on, Jimmy. Hang on. There we go.
Oh, I haven't figured out how to work the mute button, I guess.
You haven't figured out how to work fuck all. Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. This guy, Stevie, this guy hears this. And he goes, what are you doing? You're throwing me off here. And Steve, after the show all the time, the editor comes to me and goes, hey, Jimmy, what do you think was he doing there with all that noise and shit and the burping and the... You are too funny. Anyway.
We have a coach now, too.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, I talked to Reg. Yeah, we got a guy coming on board. They want to take the show worldwide.
Yeah.
Rusty.
Yeah.
Anyway, this All-Star thing, I don't know. Is that your final thought on it?
Yeah, I just think it's a show. It's a show. It's a recognition of the players. And I think that The skill stuff is good. I think people love the shooting and the skating and the hardest shot. I think the skills is great because we do get to see the best of the best. And but the game, it's tough. You trying to get guys to block shots and hit people, I don't think it's ever going to happen. And if it, the game is improved by the great players that we have and the great games and the exciting games, and that's what makes people want to watch hockey and fall in love with hockey. And the other stuff's just a, it's a show.
It's fucking a party. Stupid.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't like it. That's fine.
I don't like it anymore. I know, and I think half the reason is because you see so much hockey on TV that it's not that novel for, you know. However, talking about the All-Star Game, Russ, it's halfway through the season. Not perfectly mathematically, but that's when the All-Star Game is, of course. Yep. And now the grind is going to start, right, for a bunch of teams who are trying to make the playoffs, who are trying to stay in a playoff position, or trying to finish first, or trying to finish last to get draft picks.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody's trying.
Everyone's trying. And I know from talking to you over the years and other guys who are in the game that it's not uncommon that some player on the team off the ice and in the dressing room has made this sort of single-handed turnaround for a team by stuff he has said to the team and addressed the team, you know, to away from the coach, you know, that you get a captain who's now the chips are down, right?
Yeah.
And everyone's feeling the fucking pressure.
Yeah.
And you know, day in, day out now, it's like, okay, here we go, boys. It's like the back nine Sunday at Augusta. Now we gotta pull it off. And in your experience, Russ, in those days, was there some moment there were one of those guys who we wouldn't know as fans that someone took the bull by the horns on one of the teams you were on and stood up and said, whatever?
Bob Gainey, captain of the Montreal Canadiens, Stanley Cup, playing against the Philadelphia Flyers, and Chris Chelios elbowed Brian Propp and knocked him out. And then they, I think they won that game. Philly won that first game, I think. Mm-hmm. And this was the next day in the media. Philly's doing the, we are going to effing kill Chris Chelios. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. We're going to do all this stuff, right? All we read the next day or the day of the game. And Bob Gainey stood up, just the players. And Bob didn't say a lot. And it was the most amazing speech I've ever freaking heard in my life. And he was like, who the fuck do they think they are coming into our fucking town, in our rink, telling us and the world what the fuck they're going to do to us? Well, fuck them. Tonight, we're going to run that guy. We're going to run this fucking guy. And we're going to fucking outscore these suckers. And we're going to fucking win this fucking game. Fuck them, blah, blah, blah. We went to pregame meal after that. Craig Ludwig was cutting his steak. I swear to God, his knife almost went right through his plate. He goes, I wish we could play the fucking game right now. We're going to kill these bastards. And we went on and we beat them. And we beat them in six games.
Yep.
So I think they won the first one. We won the next three. We lost game five, went into Philly. And then that's where... if you Google it, you'll see Ron Hextall came out and ran Chris Chelios and got into a fight because we were going to win the game. And so he went after Chelly, and that's why, because you knocked out Brian Propp in the first game. And so they won game one, game five, and we won the rest. And then Bob Gainey, we're in Calgary, mm-hmm. and he calls a player only meeting, and Pat Burns had been sitting out Claude Lemieux, and it was a huge, you know, the French-English thing came up with the team. And Bob Gainey said, they're trying to divide our team. And he goes, Pepe, that was his nickname, Pepe, you're ready, right? When we, I know you haven't played, but when you're in, you're going to be ready, right? And then he went on, and he he said all these amazing things like, it's us and we're going to beat these guys. You know, we're going to, you know, we got to play against the Flames. They're a great team. We got to do this and that. So we won the next two games. So and I always said we were one Bob Gainey, speech away from the cup, because every time he spoke, those two times we went on a tear. The guy was amazing because he had such respect from all of us, and we were young back then. You know, the young guys: Richer, Lemieux, Corson, Keane, Patrick Waugh.
Wow, what a team.
Yeah, those were the young guys, 21, 22, 23, 24 years old, all of us.
Yep.
And Peter Svoboda. Anyways, they were the young guys. And we just, when Bob said anything, it was like, yeah, you know, it's just like the puppy dogs at all, like the dog barks and all the heads pop up, like, yep, what? Yeah, what do you want? And what Bob said. And then, he was that guy. And Mess had that impact too. But Bob Gainey, for me, that was unbelievable when he spoke. Whew.
Right. Yeah. You couldn't, from managing a team or playing on it, Russ, because I've asked you about, would you rather be a follower or a leader? You've kind of answered that question. If you can get one guy who stands way above everybody else, it's great to have a guy like that, right?
Yeah.
In that case. And, you know, you talked about the egos of players, which was a really great thing you said, that when you put like a national team together, you know, either for the Olympics or for the World Juniors and shit, and you got all these egos, you know, you separate the men from the boys when the coach says, you said, by the way, you're a captain and a first liner. Well, you're going to be a fourth liner. And
yeah.
I'd imagine some of that takes place on an NHL team too, Russ, doesn't it?
In every team, I always tell parents, I go, look, every player that's in the NHL, doesn't matter what if they're 1 through 20, you take the 19th and 20th player, they were a captain, they were a superstar when they were growing up, and now they're grinders on a team. Can you imagine, like, you finally make it. And then the coach goes, okay, we need a checker. Guy Carboneau, I know you scored 170 points in junior. You're going to check that. And that's it. And like Carbo had to eat crow. You know, that was him. He goes, I was either do that or go to the minors. You know, do you want to score a bunch of goals in the minors or do you want to play in the NHL? And it takes a little bit to understand that not everybody gets to sit at the front of the front of the bus.
Theo Fleury, when asked when he came into the NHL, when someone said, what's the main difference? You know, obviously there's, you know, it's money and all that stuff and talent. And they said, if you had to pick one thing that you saw was the main difference when you got to your NHL training camp, your first one, what would it be? And he said, I just couldn't get over how fucking fast they can pass the puck.
How hard?
How hard.
Yeah.
He said, I never saw that in junior. Yeah. I never saw it. And when you arrived in the NHL, Rusty, what was where you stood up and went, oh my God, this is not the same game at all.
I just felt like everybody was so much older. You know, when I was 18, I just barely had hair and you know where. And guys had beards and mustaches.
On your bag, Russ, we can say that. Yeah, you didn't have hair in your bag.
Yeah. But I was like, these guys, like, they're grown men. And I'm still growing. And, you know, I started out, I was like 172 pounds soaking wet. I finished my career at 190. I mean, I had a lot of growing left. Maybe not in height, but developing as a man. I mean, gosh, it was just, I couldn't believe it. Like, you go, you know, we had a few guys who were like, they're chia pets. They go for practice, you know, nothing on their face. They finish practice. Bill Stewart had a full freaking beard after practice. I'm like, who are these guys?
I'll tell you how fucking, I'm going to tell you right now, Russ, how crazy insane you are, okay? This is the funniest thing, Stevie, you're the editor. This might be the funniest thing ever that Russ has said on the show. So 5 minutes ago, okay, 5 minutes ago, you're explaining about Bob Gainey giving the team a speech, and it goes like this: "You effing sea sucker, you bunch of sea suckers." This no. Russ said the full word, folks. I know it'll be edited out. You effing this and you fucking this and that. So anyway, I'm going whammo, like being sniped in the head. And then all of a sudden, you talk about coming into your first team and afraid to admit that you had no hair on your bag.
Going, I had hair. I said, I barely had hair, you idiot.
But you're embarrassed to say it. And I'm going, well, let's back up here what you just said about this stuff. Anyway.
Comes and goes. Comes and goes. But I just, Boris, I'll tell you, the biggest thing for me when I got to the NHL was when my idol walked through those old wooden doors in the Maple Leaf dressing room. And when he walked in, it was like, oh my God, there he is. There's God.
there he is. Cool.
And I just, and he was ripped and he was wearing... This is so crazy. I'm 18 years old. I'm with Jeff Jackson. He's the second round pick. And Dan Hodgson is the fifth or sixth round pick. Fifth round pick, I think. Can't remember. And we're sitting there at our first training camp. And in comes Borey. And we all had the same reaction. And he had on camo pants. You know, and remember back in the 80s sure. when guys wore camo pants?
I do.
And he had camo pants on and a T-shirt. And the guy was freaking ripped. And we're all like, look at him. Look at him. Yeah. Look at, oh, my God. Look how ripped he is. Oh, he was just, you know, oh, my God. And I'm sure a lot of players have that. You know, of somebody, but I got to play with my idol growing up. It was great.
Yeah. But it's a great wrap on a show where we're honoring today and thinking about Kobe Bryant and the heroic status he had. When you talk about this, it gives people an idea of why there is an outpouring about mm-hmm. heroes. When you talk about finally meeting your idol, you know, mm-hmm. that it just, you know, set you off. Right.
Well, I'll tell you another idol story is Gretz, and we'll go back to Gretz. So after he wins the Olympics as the GM,
yep.
he comes back to Sherwood Country Club, and Paul Redham, for people who don't know who Paul Redham is, he's a friend of ours, member of Sherwood Country Club, and he won two Kentucky Derbies. I think I talked about it,
wow.
Nyquist, and I'll have another. And anyways, he's with his brother from Windsor, Ontario, and two buddies, and they just got off the golf course, four mm-hmm. of them. And Paul Redham's a huge hockey fan, huge Red Wing fan, and he's from Windsor, now made gazillion dollars in mortgage company. And mm-hmm. and anyways, he's a huge hockey fan. So Wayne rolls in, and Paul, you know, I'm sitting with Paul and his brother and these two guys from Windsor, and in comes Gretz like the night before they won the Olympics, or the, you know, 2 days ago.
Right, right.
And he goes, he sits down as typical as Wayne does, and he starts telling these Canadians all about the Olympics from the
Jesus.
First to the last, first game to the last game. It was 2 hours. It was unfreaking believable. We go, like, guys are, I got, they don't want to, you know, when you're sitting around hearing a good story and you got to go to the bathroom, like I did last show, I really had to go. And you're like, you don't want to leave the seat. You don't want to leave the story because you're going to miss something. And these guys yeah. were sprinting to the bathroom to get back to the table so they wouldn't miss anything.
Yeah.
And finally, I'm in the bathroom, and this guy pulls up, and he goes, it's like we're frickin' talking to Babe Ruth.
Is that cool?
It's like, oh, my God. And then right. Paul Redham, who's a, you know, multi-hundred millionaire, mm-hmm. after Wayne goes, he almost was in tears going, Russ, that is the greatest gift that anyone could give my brother and his friends.
Oh, cool.
And I just want to thank you. And I go, I didn't do anything. Wayne just came in and sat down. Like, what are no, I know, but he sat down because you were there, not because of me. And anyways, that's the kind of stuff that Kobe has and Borea had. And, you know, for me, that's what yeah. Borea had for me personally. Borea, I can't put him in the same category as those guys.
Sure
as great as he wasn't, you know, that. But that's what Wayne has. Kobe has it. Wayne has it. They're legends. Legends.
When the sports collectible thing became very sexy, you know, years ago, and people, and eBay came along, right? And everyone always makes the joke, you know, and I'd be getting a jersey signed, you know, for a charity event. Yeah. And they'd all, and you'd always go, oh, eBay, here we come. Here we come. But people are so crazed about their celebs. I remember people started doing shit like, I was at an event, you know, with Russ Cortinel, and I picked up his discarded chewing gum. And, you know, I'm putting this shit on eBay, People are buying it. Anyway, great stuff on a tough day to be involved in the sports world after Kobe Bryant's tragedy. But well done, Rusty. We got a great show. We got a great show in there. Thanks a lot to Elite Promotional Marketing for helping us out, doing our shirts for us, and more to come from them. We got a web store coming up, and this is great, Rusty. You got to watch the tennis tonight, Russ.
Yeah.
Okay.
My wife loves tennis.
I love your wife, Russ. Did I ever tell you that? I really do.
She's great. Yeah. She's unbelievable. Beautiful woman.
Not if, Russ, but when she does leave you.
Oh.
Okay. I will.
You know, if that ever happens, she's going to go for the younger, new model, the better version. She won't be going older. She'll be going young.
Paris. I'm out.
She looks great. She's okay. Looks 25 years younger than she is.
She looks very young. Yeah. And I see her daughters with Eric. They went to Disneyland or Disney World.
Oh, Disney World. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, is Eric Kendricks, her boyfriend, played for the Vikings? Yeah. Is he playing in the Pro Bowl or not?
He did. He played. Yeah. He just came back from the Pro Bowl.
Oh, it was already on.
Yeah. It was on. Okay. It was on yesterday.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, he flew back today. He came out to the house to pick up his truck he had shipped from Mini, so he's here for a bit. And then he's off to the Super Bowl. He goes there and works the week. Even though he's not playing, he's going to be working corporately and doing all kinds of stuff. So,
good. Listen to me. Is he playing in the Pro Bowl?
Yeah,
well, he did,
yeah.
I already did. Yeah.
No wonder that you didn't have your own sports show.
I know, Jesus Christ. you know what, Russ? Just don't worry about it, because I know this is totally exciting for you doing the show. You just piss yourself right there in your seat, okay? You don't need to worry about getting up and going to the bathroom.
No, I'm good. I went to the washroom before the show started, so I wouldn't have an accident.
There we go. Another show in the books, Rusty. Thanks, man. Thanks, everyone, to listening. Check us out, The Suspendables, anywhere else. We need you to tell your friends. We want it to grow. It's all about the sharing for this thing to stay up there and keep going. We really love it. Love your comments, people. Where was the one we had the other day?
Oh,
Dave Russ.
Give the shout out to our hammock boy.
I know. I got to find it now. Jesus, hang on. Okay. Here's to Greg Villieu. Villieu. En français, mon ami. He's at Island Boy. Okay.
Yeah.
He writes at Jungle Jerome, hey guys, I love your podcast. Every Wednesday, I get set up in my hammock here in Playa Los Lados, Russ,
Panama.
Playa Los Lados, Panama. And I listen to your podcast. I listened to another podcast with two ex-hockey players for about 2 minutes, and I fell asleep. Snooze. You guys blow them away. I think I know what they're talking about. Nice. Thanks, Greg, for listening. Yeah. Tell everybody about it. And
Hello down there, Greg.
And, get back in that hammock. That's actually how Russ lives his life, in one big fucking hammock.
Yeah.
We'll get back to you next week. Go off and do whatever you do, Russ. Jesus, tell us about it next time. Good. We'll see everybody. Bye now.
Thanks, bud.